music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We had hoped this time would come for several years now, so we're ecstatic that our dream has finally come true to welcome Grammy Award-winning producer Jimmy Jam to the Kelly Alexander Show. Jimmy and his creative partner Terry Lewis have worked with A-list artists like Usher, Mariah Carey, George Michael, Prince, and Michael Jackson, not to mention their 30-plus year relationship with the incredible Janet Jackson. Jimmy is here to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Janet's Unbreakable album and share how the project was created and produced. We're beyond thrilled to welcome our next guest to the show. Jimmy Jam is a Grammy Award-winning producer and musician who, along with his partner Terry Lewis, has worked with a who's who of the recording industry, including people like Usher, Boyz II Men, Mary J. Blige, Kanye West, TLC, Gwen Stefani, Mariah Carey, George Michael, Michael Jackson, Prince, and of course, their long-standing relationship with Janet Jackson. Jimmy, thank you so much for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Oh, thanks, Kelly. Nice to be here.
So I wanted to start off about the idea that obviously there's so much to talk about with regards to your career, but I know that we're going to focus specifically on the fact that it's pretty much the one-year anniversary of the Unbreakable album. And, you know, Janet fans around the world obviously went nuts in 2015 when it was announced that she was coming back with a brand new album and, of course, the tour, and that she would be back in studio with both you and Terry. So to start off, can we talk a little bit about how the project came about? When did Janet get in touch with you? Was it sort of in 2014, before that, after that?
It was kind of, we had always been in touch with each other. We really, beyond being obviously working together, we are good friends and very close. And so I think we actually, maybe early 2014, I remember she was in LA for a brief minute, and we actually had lunch together, and we talked about everything but music. It was really interesting. And at the end of our conversation, at the end of our lunch, I said, well, we didn't really talk any music. And she said, yeah, she said, but we'll get around to that. You know, we just needed to, you know, catch up and reconnect. So that was kind of what we did. It was kind of late 2014, I guess, then her management got in contact with us and wanted to meet with us. And so we've had a meeting with Terry and myself and her management. And they basically said, you know, she wanted to get back together, do a record. And we said, great, we're all for it. And so it kind of went from there. Our process, when we finally talked to Janet, we actually had a meeting with her in New York. And we talked about kind of the game plan for doing the record. And it was very similar to what we did on the Control album, which was we wanted to do it basically left alone. We wanted it to just be us creatively, you know, obviously bring in collaborators, but, you know, people that we felt comfortable with that were going to become sort of part of the family type of thing. And then, but really not talk about it. There was a lot of speculation and a lot of things out there. And if you remember, Janet sent out the tweet and said, you know, when you hear it from my lips. And that was sort of our mandate for the record, is that we weren't going to talk about it until there was actually a record to talk about. Because I don't think either of us really liked the idea of starting a project, but going into it and feeling like, you know, everybody's waiting for it, or there's an expectation. We thought the expectation was whatever we put on ourselves, and we should share that amongst ourselves. And so that was kind of the way we decided to, you know, approach it. But it was kind of a series of events, I guess, that kind of led up to it. But at the end of the day, we were excited to work with her again, and she was excited to work with us. And that was really the thing that brought us together.
Jimmy, did you always think that she was, and I don't want to use the word coming back because that's not the right word, but just in the fact that she had been gone for a couple years, and did you think that she was going to make her return, considering like some people were thinking, oh, you know, she's had so much music success and now she's found love and seems happy. And I think, you know, obviously it had moved to the other part of the world. Did you think she would come back?
Yes. I didn't know when it would be, but I knew that it would happen, because if you're a creative person, it's in your DNA. You have to create. It doesn't mean that you have to necessarily put records out and tour, but it does mean that the creative wheels are always spinning in your head. whether it's songwriting in her case, or you know, concepts for television shows or films or whatever, her mind is always going, and creatively. So I figured at some point in time, she would. I think the other thing is that anybody who is a songwriter, I think it's always a good idea to live some life so that you have things to write about. And if you think about Janet's pattern and releasing albums over the years, there's always had been a 3 or 4 year window between albums, which I thought was always a good thing because it gave her a chance to live life, experience new things, and then talk about where she was in her life. I mean, if you look at her legacy of albums, they do a pretty good job of really telling you where she's at in her life and what she's thinking. And she had obviously gone through a lot since her last record, obviously the biggest being her brother passing away. But also, certainly, yes, falling in love, getting married, relocating to the other side of the world, basically. And so I felt like she had a lot to talk about whenever she wanted to talk about it. And I just felt like, yeah, at some point, yes, she will definitely make another record. It's interesting whether you call it a comeback or not. I guess it's an easy word to kind of use because it kind of does sum up if you've been away.
Yeah.
You are coming back. But like I say, if you have a creative mind, you're never gone too far from that. Your mind is always spinning. Your wheels are always spinning in your mind creatively. So I think because of that, I just felt like, yeah, she'll definitely be back at some point in time. The nice thing is that the way that it worked out, she was able to do it on her own terms, which is the way that she's always kind of done it and always kind of wanted to do it. And it was great because it was not that anybody, you know, told her, well, you got to come back or you have to do it. I mean, it was literally on her own terms. And I always think when you're working and collaborating with somebody and they're excited about it and they want to do it, then it makes it better. I mean, there were a few albums over the years that we did where I honestly felt she wasn't necessarily ready to make an album, but there were record company expectations and there were, you know, obligations or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you can judge whether the work is her best work or not. But I think that this was a case where there was none of that. She was totally, as she talked about, you know, 30 years prior, she was in control mm-hmm. of this. And I think that's what made it, I think, such a refreshingly unique album for her.
What do you say, Jimmy, when someone like me, I'm going to tell you right now, like when I listened to the album when it, you know, came out on October 2nd last year and I got my hands on it and then I listened to it. It almost felt like, and not trying to compare to her past work, but it almost felt like a bit of like half of Rhythm Nation and half of Velvet Rope in a 2015 way.
I think it's accurate only in the sense that, you know, there's obviously kind of sonic pieces from those albums. I think that lyrically, I think there were certainly things that have not been cleaned up since Rhythm Nation that were talked about and themes that are very much prevalent today. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, even more so since Unbreakable came out, which is ironic. But I think that in that sense, there definitely was that Rhythm Nation sense. I think Velvet Rope, there was a lot of sonic things that we did, kind of ear candy, we like to call it, that, you know, a lot of people don't hear, but the fans certainly hear, where there's certain sounds that we had retired, I guess you could say, and we brought them back for the album. The whole idea with Unbreakable was just to create a sonic, we call it like a bed, basically, mm-hmm. that she can just lay in. And from that point, sonically, just express whatever she wants to do lyrically. There's bits of Control. I think there's bits of All For You. I think there's bits of really all of her albums. And I think that was really, I don't know whether we consciously set out to do that so much, but I think the idea of it going back and the creative force, if you will, behind the record being starting with the three of us as the bass, with no outside, I don't like to use the word interference, but we'll just say no outside interference. You know, it was the three of us just creating, which was very much like we did on the Control record, where it was, you know, nobody knew we were even making a record. Nobody was expecting a record. And all of a sudden Control hit, and it was like, wow, what is that? You know? So the environment was very similar. The mindset was very similar. So I think that comes across in Unbreakable, certainly things from the past albums.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Grammy Award-winning producer Jimmy Jam. Make sure to follow him on Twitter and on Instagram at Flight Time Jam. Jimmy, can you let us know how a writing session actually goes with Janet? Like, do you have melodies that you play for her and then she writes around it, or does she come in with specific ideas?
There's really no set way. When we start a project, the thing that we normally do, first of all, is we play a lot of music back and forth to each other, just things that we had been listening to over, you know, the past, in this case, you know, 7 years or so. But we would play, you know, we'd play things that we liked, that, you know, things that we had heard that we thought were kind of cool, and she'd play us things. And then we'd always dig back, and, you know, we never start a session without listening to some great Motown music, some James Brown, some Sly and the Family Stone. We usually slip in some Brazilian music of some sort. Those are kind of the influences that we all like. And so we do it just kind of as inspiration, just remembering how great music can be. And then we aspire to try to reach that. We don't always succeed, but we try. You know, we try to set the bar high with the classics, with the people that made great music in her family, obviously her brothers, you know, starting with the Jackson Five. When you talk about Motown and that era of great music and great songwriting, you know, you don't have to look too far past her own family, you know. So we set a bar really high when we start. And then as far as the actual creative process, it can vary. It can be, I remember Velvet Rope was interesting because Velvet Rope was one where she had almost written all the lyrics before we even did the music. She already knew lyrically what she wanted to say, and we kind of created the music to match the lyrics. Normally, though, we create the music first. We a lot of times will have a title. You know, we have what we used to call it the book of titles. Now I guess it's the laptop of titles. But whenever we hear something that's clever, or you know, it could be a line from a movie, it could be, you know, a sign that we see somewhere that's kind of cool or whatever, we always write it down. And then a lot of times we'll go through the book of titles and say, oh, this is a cool title, let's write a song around this. But generally, I'll lay down a track. A lot of times we'll sit in the room together, and it's always interesting. When I'm in the room with Janet, I always can watch her body language and know if I'm playing something that she likes. Like if I just put on a keyboard sound or I put on something that she'll always kind of, I'll watch her body language and we'll just be having a general conversation and she'll be something that she'll notice and she'll go, what is that right there that you just played? And I'll go, oh, nothing. Well, I'm just kind of messing around. And a lot of times if it's something like that, if I get her attention with something, then we'll go ahead and kind of build it like that. But it's very organic, the way that it works. Melodically, she's got a great sense of melody. Sometimes I'll do what she calls, we used to call them blackmail tapes. And it was kind of, I would do the melodies on stuff, and I can't sing at all, really. But I can sing good enough to kind of show her what the melody I'm hearing is. And I remember on Unbreakable, mm-hmm. probably the first one that I did was, I think it was After You Fall. And I sang kind of a skeleton of what I thought the vocals should be. And I remember she called me and she just was cracking up and she was just laughing. And then, but then she sent me a vocal that she did. That when as soon as the tape came on, or it's not a tape obviously anymore, it's a file, but as soon as the file came on, she just said, stop laughing, Jimmy. Because she knew I was going to start laughing as soon as she came on singing. But that's kind of the way a lot of it works. It's very collaborative. Terry is a great lyricist. And a lot of times when Janet gets stuck on how to say something, Terry's really good at taking something and making it into, you know, like shortening it and editing it and making it into something very concise, you know. But it just all kind of seems to work very organically together. And we know each other really well enough now where there's no ego, there's no, if we don't like something, we just don't like it. I mean, there's no hurt feelings, there's nothing. It's like we're just trying to get it the best that we can possibly get it.
I'm going to ask you something about what was the first song you actually started recording for Unbreakable, but I want to bring you back to those little vocal bits, the Blackmail tapes, because when we hear on all the albums, you know, those little sort of interludes that were obviously all over, you know, Rhythm Nation and Velvet Rope, we heard them too, and then there was a little bit of that, especially at the end of Unbreakable. Are you just always recording her in the booth, Jimmy, and then you've got these things that they can maybe slip in for the album?
Yes, always recording. Back when we... Now, we recorded everything digitally on this album, but on some of the albums in the past when we would record analog, I would always have a DAT player, which was a, you know, basically a digital tape player for people that don't know what a DAT is. It was a little digital tape player, and I would always have one going the whole session. And sometimes she knew about it, and most of the time she didn't even realize I was doing it. But she is really, we could do really a whole album of just outtakes because she is so hilarious in the studio and the things she says and some of the stuff that she does. And so we always have it. Sometimes we use it, sometimes we don't. But yeah, there's always a tape or something going. In this case, we did it digitally. So we had a second, we were running both Logic and Pro Tools, which are the kind of the two recording systems that we use. And I recorded most of the tracks to Logic, and then we did most of the vocals in Pro Tools. But whichever one we weren't using, we usually were running as a backup and just kind of catching vocal stuff. And the little piece that's at the end of Unbreakable actually is probably about a 2-minute or 3-minute piece of her saying, you know, the thank you or whatever, like in a whole bunch of different ways. And she kept going, is that good? And I'm like, do another one. Okay. And she kept doing them and doing them. And we just kind of picked the one that we thought was kind of funny and just made it, because we kind of like the idea of that. I mean, she is so much fun in the studio. The thing that the fans don't get to hear, I think they hear her joy in making music and our joy in making music. I think you hear it in the tracks on the actual songs, but we have the bonus of actually hearing it and feeling it in the studio as it's happening. There's so much laughter and so much, I mean, it's hard work, but it's a lot of laughter and a lot of fun. And she gets very giddy, particularly when it gets late, and it's just a laugh fest, you know? And so we capture a whole lot of that stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of that stuff eventually will get shared, you know, with people. Because it is very special for us, anyway, to record with her and really know her, you know, how silly she is. She is very silly. She's still like a kid, you know. And we get a lot of that in the studio for sure.
Well, on behalf of all the fans, I want to thank you and Terry for doing it because I know listening to all these albums, you know, from front to the end, those little vocal things that we hear, it just makes her more real to us and cute and fun. And like you said, it actually brings what you guys get in the studio to us, the fans. So on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for doing that, Jimmy.
Sure.
I also wanted to ask you with regards to when the project kicked off, what was the first song you guys actually recorded for Unbreakable?
It was After You Fall. We had, she was, I can't remember whether she was in New York or if she was in, she might have been in Dubai, I'm not sure. And I remember coming up with just the kind of the piano idea for it. And I sent it to her, and she said, she called me back and she said, I love this. She said, what were you thinking on this? And I said, I don't really know. I said, I hear After You Fall, but I don't really know what else it is. I said, I guess it could be whatever you want it to be about. I said, when I was thinking about it, I was thinking sort of about Michael. I said, but it doesn't have to be about Michael. It can be about whatever you think it should be. And she the next day sent me back, like I say, a finished version, just with a demo vocal on it. And so when we did finally start recording, we just thought that that would be a great place to start. It was interesting because she hadn't sung in a studio for a really long time. And so there was a little bit of insecurity, I think, about it. And she kind of said, I don't even know. My voice has changed, I think, a little bit, and I'm not sure. And I remember when we actually went into the session and we started recording, and literally when she sang the first line of the song, it was just, I was the only one in the room at the time, and I just remember thinking, oh, she's got this. Like, this is going to be great. And she did it, I think After You Fall might have been maybe 3 or 4 takes, and that was it. She totally got the song at that point. And that was kind of our starting point. And I remember when we finished the session, I just said to her, I said, it sounds really good. And she didn't really want to hear it. She just said, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. And I said, okay. And then I comped the vocal. And comping the vocal, basically, for people that don't know, is I'll take, if she does 4 vocal takes, I'll try to look for the best little parts of each of the vocal takes. There may be a certain word she says or a certain breath she takes or something. And I'm just, it's kind of like an editor with film, right? You're just trying to take the best little parts and put it together to make a great scene. That's the way we look at kind of doing her vocal. And I put a vocal together, a comp vocal. And when she walked in the next day, I played it. And she never ever will say that something sounds good with her voice on it. She'll say maybe something like, yeah, that's not too bad. I don't sound too bad on that, or something like that. But she'll never really go, wow, I really sound great on that. Like, you'll never hear her say that. But I thought she killed it. I thought she did such a great job on it. And, you know, we were off and running at that point.
You said earlier that After You Fall, kind of, you know, you had Michael in your head and you weren't sure where she would take it. But if we bring you over to Broken Hearts Heal, how difficult was that for you guys to put together? Obviously, it's a big reference towards Michael. Was it actually, like, not as challenging as one might expect because so many years had passed and maybe it was more of a sentimental look back towards him? Or was it actually really difficult for all of you guys?
By the time we actually finished the song, It was easy, but it started off kind of hard. And it was one of those things where lyrically you had to commit and say, is this what I want to make the song about? Like, we actually had the Broken Hearts Heal was a title we had in our book of titles. And so we didn't know what the song was going to be about. We just knew that we liked the title and we liked the musical track that we had put together. And it became, as it was being written, about Michael. But it didn't necessarily start off as, let's write a song about Michael. But it just became the right vehicle, I guess you will, to express a whole lot of things. And she very much like in if you remember Together Again, where it was more celebratory than sad. That's what we thought about Broken Hearts Heal, was that it's kind of the way everybody has experienced loss in their life. And you never get over the memory of somebody, but the pain tends to fade a little bit and you tend to remember the good times. And I think it was at that point, because it had been, the time had passed since he had, you know, since Michael had passed away, it was more of a celebratory thing. And the way we sonically tried to treat the song was very much like a Michael song in the style of it. And if you listen to the way, an interesting thing, when she was in the studio singing the song, Janet has very good discipline on, as far as singing on the microphone. Like, when you're in a studio, it's different than performing live and stuff. It's, you know, you kind of have to stand the same place and not really move around a lot. And, you know, there's like certain rules, you know, that you do in the studio where you want to try to make the vocal really good. And she had always been very good at doing that. We never had to tell her, you know, move closer, get farther away, and, you know, make you adjust yourself or take off your jewelry or, you know, don't snap your fingers or anything like that. She always gave us a very clean vocal. On that song, the interesting thing was every time the second verse of that song came in, she started snapping her fingers. And she would start singing, and then she'd go, oh, I'm sorry. She said, I'm sorry. For some reason, I keep snapping my fingers. And I said to her, that's because that's what your brother used to do. And it was funny because when we recorded with Michael and we did Scream and some of the other songs, Michael had the worst studio habits of anybody we've ever recorded. I mean, he literally was, you never could keep him on the microphone because he was always dancing. So you kind of had to set the mic up to kind of pick up whatever sound was going on in the room. But then he'd also wear jewelry. He'd wear hard shoes. He'd do everything wrong. And then he'd clap and he'd snap and he'd do all that stuff. But that was the magic in those tracks, was his energy, and all of that came through. So with Janet, we just said, you know what, just if that's what you feel, just go ahead and do that. So the snaps you hear on Broken Heart Seal are just her snaps from in the studio. That was just kind of a natural thing that she did. So I think she really felt his spirit without even knowing it. And I think we overall, too, I mean, I know that a lot of people felt like there were some of the songs she sounded like Michael on, or you know, resembled his voice. And I said, but to me, she's always resembled his voice. The difference is we've always had his voice to compare or whatever, because he was still making music. The fact that obviously there's not new recordings being made, and Janet's maturity, her voice maturing, and I think there is a little more of Michael's voice in Janet's voice just naturally. And we didn't shy away from it. We just kind of said, you know, go ahead, like Great Forever, for instance. It's like, go ahead and attack it like Michael would attack it. Why not? I mean, you're a Jackson. This is, you're right. This is your voice. And some of the other songs, I think, have very much kind of Jackson 5-ish hints of sound in there. And I think we purposely didn't shy away from that. And she didn't either. I think we felt very comfortable with it. So, you know, like I say, I think it's a very honest record at the end of the day. I mean, I think whatever we were feeling on any given day, you hear on the record. And it's interesting because, as I said earlier, anything you wanted to know about Janet at any time in her life, you could really listen to her records and know exactly where she was at, what she was feeling. And so I think Unbreakable is no different.
Was it a conscious effort, Jimmy, for you guys to have such a well-rounded sounding album, and the fact that, like, you know, you can pick up No Sleep, which is super R&B, and that's kind of like the R&B that we know Janet to do, and it's kind of like, you know, and I Get Lonely, like, you just know that that's a Janet sound that you guys create with her. But then you go all the way the other way with regards to Gonna Be All Right, and it's like soul and funk, and then I would even say there's like some indie flavor in there as well. It just seems like it's such a well-balanced record. Was like, did you guys create a whole bunch of songs and have to pare it down, or was it literally track by track that you built the pyramid?
We ended up, I think, at the end of the day, I want to say, I remember there was we had a board that Janet would write down the songs. That was like her assignment every day, like a big white board, and she would put up all the songs, and then she'd put checks by the ones that she thought these were going to keep these, and some of the other ones we'd erase off and whatever. And we finally ended up with, I think we pared it down to 20 or 21 songs. And of those, I think 17 actually have seen the light of day. But I think at the, yes, we tried to make a record. We really, at really no part of the record until the very end did we say, we need one more like this or one more like that. I can tell you that as we were recording, we were just kind of taking it song by song. And certain songs like Well Traveled, for instance. Well Traveled was a track that I had done, and I wasn't even necessarily thinking of it for her. It was just, I was just kind of messing around with some sounds one day and thought it kind of sounded cool. But I liked the idea. Oh, and I had, once again, Well Traveled was a, you know, in the book of titles, because I thought it was a great title. And I kind of, in going through songs, she heard the track, and she said, wait, what is that? And I said, oh, it's just this track I got. And she said, play that. And I played it. And she said, do you have a melody for it? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay. and I put the little melody on it, and the next day she came back and the song was done. And so then we thought it was, as she sang it and as she ended up doing it, it was, as we said, it kind of sounded like you started off in India and ended up in, I don't know, California desert somewhere, you know, like it really had, it was a song called Well Traveled that really took you on a journey sonically. And that was kind of what we wanted to do. And that's kind of her life. I mean, the way she lyrically wrote it is tremendous, because it really talks about from town to town. That's kind of an entertainer's life. But each place is home that you go to, because the fans make you feel like home. They're inviting you into their home or their arena, wherever you're at. And, you know, you never want that to end. You want to just kind of keep going, you know. It's a journey. So I think that was that song. When we got towards the end of the album and we were looking for a couple of specific things, and I remember the last two songs we did were, Damn Baby was one of them. And Damn Baby was, she was into rehearsals at this point and doing dance rehearsals. And the way our studio is set up here is we have like a huge warehouse, basically. So we can configure it however we want to configure it. And we have a big wall of mirrors. And we literally, but we also have a ton of instruments everywhere. So we moved the instruments out of the way, moved the grand piano out of the way, and gave them like a full mirror. And I just said, you can have your dancers come and you can rehearse here while we're, you know, finishing the record. So because she was in dance rehearsals and all of that all day, she kind of felt like, I need one more kind of dance record. And so that was one where we actually sought out that kind of record. And we collaborated with a guy named Dim Joints, who's tremendous producer. He was in the middle of working on the Compton soundtrack at that same time. And he came up with kind of the concept for the track and the whole thing, and we put it all together. And I remember her coming back from, I remember her father had gotten ill, and she had gone down to see him, and she came back, and we played her the track and what we had kind of finished and stuff. And she came back very tired and kind of not very happy, and she immediately got a smile on her face, and she said, this is exactly what I feel we need. So kind of as a finishing thing on the album. The other song that came along really late in the process, but we absolutely loved it. She had said at a certain point that we're done with songs now. We're not going to write any more songs. We're not going to do any more songs. We have to choose what we got, because we had deadlines. You know, we were trying to make the October 2nd deadline, and so I said, okay, great. So another collaborator that we worked with on the album, Tommy. Tommy had sent this track, and I told Tommy, I said, don't send any more tracks, Tommy. We're good. We got what we need. So he said, okay, I'm just going to send you this one more. Actually, he sent me two. And the first one he sent me, it wasn't very good. And so it's not that it wasn't good, but it didn't fit what we were trying to do. So I was like, okay, forget it. He sends this second one. And I remember listening to it, and I had it on my headphones. And I walked out. I was in the bathroom, actually. And I walked out the bathroom. Janet starts talking to me, and she said, oh, sorry, I didn't see you had your headphones in. I said, Jan, I said, do you remember when you said to me, we're not going to accept any more songs unless it's something like real special? And she said, yeah. And I said, let's go upstairs and listen to this real quick. And she said, okay. We went upstairs, and it was Night. And it was funny. I think I got it before she did. Like, when I'm listening to it, I'm going, oh my God, this is so good, because it's not only a great record, but it's a record we didn't have. You know, it was kind of like No Sleep, just the kind of plush. When we say plush, we just mean a very sophisticated sound. It had a very sophisticated sound to it, mm-hmm. but it had a great tempo to it. And then I also heard this whole kind of Minneapolis flavor to it, and I was like, oh, this is so perfect. And I remember Terry was listening to it, and Terry was like, oh my God, this is great. Tommy. We called him back. We said, Tommy, you might have just bumped yourself off the record, but you know, with one of your other songs, but this one's going to make it. And she got it. Once we started singing it and everything, she totally got into it. And it's one of my favorites to this day to listen to. It always gets me in a great mood. And it's a just You know, it's just, it was kind of the finishing touch, kind of the icing on the cake on the album. Because in, as you say, Kelly, it made, the album was very well rounded. So then it kind of, that was a sound and a flavor we didn't have on the album. And it came through at the last minute. And we love that record.
I'm so glad you put it on because it's my favorite track on the album. So thank God you guys, thank God you guys found that one. When it comes to, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Dance Records and obviously about this album specifically, but if I can bring you back for a second to like the Throbs of the World and then, you know, Burn It Up on this one, how does Janet actually feel about, like, I know she loves to dance, but these ones like Throb, you know, it's funny because like everybody still loves Throb so much. It's even, you know, it translates well, even though it was early 90s, it still sounds amazing today. Obviously, Burn It Up, I think, is kind of timeless in the dance realm. How does she, how do you guys feel about putting out those types of songs? Because they're just, like, infectious.
Well, we love it, and we take our cue from her. I mean, she's a dancer, so just as I said earlier about her body language, I mean, you can tell if you're on the right track with a record if her body language is right. And Throb, I remember when we did it, it was funny because her girl, I'm trying to think of it, oh, Josie, the dancer. One of her dancers was in the studio and when we were recording, and she's the one that does the, here we go now, get busy. That's her singing. Uh-huh. Cause she just had this tone and we thought, wow, this is perfect. But it really, the record really happened because all the dancers were around and you could actually, as you were making the track, you could literally watch the dancers and the way they would move to something and know that you were on the right track with, you know, with what you were doing. Burn It Up was, we, one of the things before we started the record, we said is that we wanted Missy Elliott on the record. And so it was kind of like, let's create a great track for Missy that really, that works for Janet, but also works for Missy really well. And that was sort of the motivation of Burn It Up. And, which is also a Dim Joints, track. And that was one that we tried. That one took a few tries to get it to where we really, you know, I think got it correct. But Missy, it was great because we did it kind of an initial kind of a skeleton track. We gave it to Missy. Missy came up with the hook and, you know, her little rap sections and stuff. And Missy's rap and everything on there is just a demo. It's, she said, I'm going to redo it. And we loved it the way it was. We were like, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. And so we kind of left everything the way it was. And we just thought the flavor was infectious. And I love going on, you know, Twitter and Instagram and seeing all the different dance troupes from around the world dancing to that song. It really became kind of a, you know, one of those dance anthem type songs where I just love watching people move to it. And obviously Janet, you know, if Janet wants things she can dance to, and it's interesting, there's things that we would do and she'd say, I really like this, but I don't want to dance to it. It doesn't make me want to get up and dance. So she's very clear about things that will make her get up and dance. And some things are, like you say, along the lines of Throb or Burn It Up or whatever. Some things are the more groove orientated stuff, like That's the Way Love Goes, like No Sleep, like Got Till It's Gone, whatever. But if it makes her move and feel good, then we know we're on the right track.
Speaking of the title track, Unbreakable, I wanted to bring you to that. You know, obviously, I think a lot of us view that song as, to us, her fans. When did you guys work on that? And it just seems like she really is having such a great time singing that song. And it really feels like it's a gift directly to the Jan fam.
It is absolutely a gift. It is a, it really is the foundation of what the album was. It was interesting because I remember when we, Unbreakable was a title, you know, once again, she had that title and she said Unbreakable. And it was interesting because Michael had a title, Unbreakable, and Michael's song was very much about how he was unbreakable. But Janet's Unbreakable was about her love of the fans, her love of her family, her faith, so on and so forth. And it was interesting because when we said Unbreakable, I remember it didn't, the title of the record didn't even, you know, come up till very late in the recording process. I mean, we knew what the title of the album was, But whenever we said that, some people would go, wow, Unbreakable. Yeah, that sounds kind of like Michael. And it's like, yeah, but when you hear the song, you'll realize it's a totally different thing. You know, the message that the song has and the feel that the song has. And I remember playing it for, you know, BMG was our, you know, partner, our record company partner on it. And I remember playing it for the BMG folks and they were blown away. And they wasn't at all, they said, this isn't at all what we thought it was. And we said, yeah, well, you got to trust us. You know, we know what we're doing here, but yeah, no, it's definitely, it's about the fans and it's about the things that in your life that you hold near and dear. And no matter what you're going through, whether it's, you know, loss of family or whatever that is, there's the things that you hold close to you and the bond that you have with your friends and family and fans, it's unbreakable. And that's the way she feels. She feels like no matter whether she, you know, makes a record every day for the next, you know, year, or she makes no records for 5 years, that at the end of the day, the fans will be there for her and have been there for her. And that was what that song was trying to express.
When you guys lay out the album to decide the order that things are going to go in, how does that process go? Because again, it just seems like you guys are super flawless at doing that. Like Rhythm Nation was laid out super hot, like Velvet Rope, like everything just really flows. Is that an easy process for you guys to do? Or does it take like several cracks at it?
It varies. I think after we figure out which songs we kind of like, then we kind of put them in some sort of order. Sometimes it's a mood order. Sometimes it's kind of a storytelling order. It varies, but we do think of the projects like albums. We realize particularly in this day and age where you can just kind of cherry pick the songs you like, just take two songs off and whatever. But we think that Janet's fans expect an album. And as producers, we kind of think of things in terms of an album. We have an order that we'd like for people to listen, and obviously they have the choice to listen in whatever order they want to, but we do have a certain kind of plan and a certain kind of order. I remember we did this, the sequence of this record was very last minute because we were just right up against deadlines, and I remember I was coming back from, I have a son that goes to school in Arizona, and I was coming back from his, I think his basketball game or something, or no, he was actually moving in, maybe moving into campus or something. And I drove back, and I remember as I was driving back, I was listening to all the songs. And so I had like a 5-hour drive. And during the 5-hour drive, in my mind, I think I figured out what the sequence was. So then literally, Janet came to the studio probably about 8 or 9 at night. And probably by 2 in the morning, I think we pretty much had what we thought, you know, made sense as far as the sequence on the record. But we do take it very seriously. We try to make it, you know, a bit of a journey for people that want to listen to it like that. And I think it's one of the important aspects of an album. I mean, I think in order for people, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, should people even make albums nowadays? And I'm an advocate of, yes, absolutely, you should make an album because people can make, they can take the songs they want and listen however they want to. But if you're an artist and you have a vision of what that should be in the order you would like to hear, you know, the songs presented, then by all means, you should do that. And Janet's definitely one of those kinds of artists.
I wanted to ask you about when you presented, you and Terry presented Janet with the BET Award last May, I think it was, because for so many of us, that was the first time we've seen Janet like in years. And I just remember watching the television screen, you know, all the way up here in Montreal, Canada. And just, I was just overtaken by how happy I was to see her, like just happy to see her. And even though she only spoke for like 30 seconds, I was so happy to hear her voice and so happy to just see her and that she looked so happy and well-rested and peaceful. Because you were there, Jimmy, and obviously I could see this crowd of celebrities going absolutely insane for her. What was it like to be in that milieu, I guess, and then knowing that, you know, the album was coming, like, were you guys feeling like you were off to a good start, just knowing that people were so happy to just see her and see you and see Terry together?
Yeah, it was a great feeling. It was a great, you know, obviously a great reception from the crowd at that point. We knew that No Sleep at that point had been very well received. So there was a sense that people were happy to see her. As you said, she looked absolutely radiant. She was very happy. And yeah, it was great to be a part of that experience. It was interesting too, because if you watch it, I didn't realize it when it was happening, but when she came out, they gave her a standing ovation and they didn't sit down. Everybody stood up the whole time she was speaking, which was amazing to me. I didn't even notice it as it was happening. But I thought that was pretty amazing. I do think that there's value in going away for a minute. Janet's aware of it. I don't remember whether it was either the Rhythm Nation album or the Janet album. She said to me one day, she said, "I know these people got to be sick of me. I'm sick of me." Because literally you had seen her everywhere for a good year and a half. You know, it wasn't, you know, the days now where there's maybe two singles from an album or whatever, but I know Rhythm Nation went seven singles deep, for instance, and you go from Miss You Much, and then, you know, 2-3 years later, you're at Love Will Never Do. And I think it was Rhythm Nation album, as a matter of fact, when she said that. She said, I need to, not so much that I need to go away, but just that she said, I'm sick of seeing me. And I think people got to be sick of seeing me because I'm sick of seeing me. So I think that there's some value to that, and she gets it and she understands that. As I said earlier, you got to recharge your batteries. You got to find your inspirations. You have to find things to write about if you're a songwriter. You know, one of the things that concerned me on some of the albums was that she didn't feel she had anything to write about. And that's scary for a songwriter to say that. You know, it's like, of course you got stuff to write about. Well, you can write about that you don't have anything to write about. That's a theme, you know. But that's not the way she should do it. She's got to live life. And so I think it's smart. And I think the reception that she got at the BET Awards was just a small example of the reception she basically got from everybody around the world, quite honestly. I mean, I got a chance to see a lot of the shows. And it was very much that same kind of reception for her. So she was very pleased and very moved by the reception, not only from BET, but just the overall reception of everybody, of the fans.
What was it like, Jimmy, like you mentioned, to see, you know, the concert, like when you went to the first concert and saw her back on stage? Because again, it had been since 2011, since we'd sort of seen her. And this was the first time as well with new music. What was it like for you to see, you know, our girl back up there? Because again, it was just like the reception she got in Vancouver was just, you know, off the charts.
Yeah. Well, I was at the Vancouver show and that was amazing. I loved it because I'm a fan. At the end of the day, I'm a fan like everybody else. I'm blessed because I get to actually work with her, but I can separate myself from that and just be a fan and just watch her and admire her. And I know how much work she puts into it, how much care she puts into it, how concerned she is about everybody looking good. All of her dancers, her band, she's concerned about the sound, the lighting, the crew, everybody. So to see the result of that culminate with such a pleasing fan experience, and the show was so good because there's no filler. There's none of that kind of downtime of, you know, I'm going to change clothes a million times. Now I'm going to show a video. Now I'm going to do this. It's like, no. I'm going to give you like 33 songs back to back to back to back to back to back to back. It's going to be relentless. And I love that because, first of all, most artists can't do that. And a lot of the ones that can don't. So I loved it. I thought the show was incredible. I'd seen the rehearsals, but to actually see the show in front of the audience and see her just light up with the audience and the appreciation of what it is that she had done. Not only, remember the Vancouver show, the album wasn't even out yet.
Right.
That's the funny thing about it. So when she was playing the new songs, it was interesting. Even one of the promoters said to me, you know, it's funny because most times when an artist does their new songs, people head for the exits and go to the bathroom. And they said, with Janet, it was like everybody stood there just wanting to hear what it was. So that was a really good feeling.
Do you fully expect her to be back after her family gets settled? Because I know, like, I was fortunate enough to interview some of the band, and I know they kind of told us that they're kind of on call and waiting for her to get things settled and get, you know, get things going again. And I feel like when she put out that tweet a couple of weeks back, or maybe it's even a couple of months now, where she said she misses her Jan fam. So, like, she really wants, I think, to be there for us.
She does. And I think that, you know, listen, you don't know. You kind of, it's, you know, it's God's plans, God's hands right now. So as far as her plans, yes, you will see her back if she is planning on it and excited about it. But, you know, you don't know what that experience is like to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that, you know, you gotta give her a little bit of time to absorb that and what that's all about. But I think that in her mind, yes, she will be back out there. She was having a great time. I will tell you that. She told me the other day that it was the funnest tour for her that she had ever done. And I just think, once again, the appreciation of the fans, but also her appreciation of where she's at in her life right now, and the love of the music that she was singing, the current music she was singing, combined with the love of the music she had made in the past. It just all was a great culmination of positive vibes. And I think she really loved it and appreciated it. So I would expect when she's physically ready and when she's mentally ready, she will resume and you'll see her back out there.
Jimmy, before I let you go, last question. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the fact that, you know, I think so many of us thought last year was going to be the year for her to get that Rock Hall nomination and get in. Has it been frustrating for you? Or maybe frustrating is the wrong word, but I know for us it's frustrating because it seems like such a no-brainer to have Janet Jackson in that Rock Hall of Fame.
Well, if it was a no-brainer, she'd be in, but obviously the people that are voting have no brains. You know, it's a head-scratcher, I guess, at the end of the day. She's broken down so many barriers for women, for performers. There's not a performer that's out there right now. And I mean, everybody from Beyonce to you name it, Rihanna, anybody that you can name who's a female performer, who's out there with dancers, who's got the little mic around their ear, you know, that they're singing into. The idea of mounting tours on that level with the production value and the videos and all of that is her. And that influence goes across really all genres of music and certainly rock. So, and to me, rock and roll is, it's an attitude. It's a groundbreaking, edgy attitude that she has in spades, obviously. So, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I do believe that, you know, things happen when they're supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big believer in that. And it probably wasn't supposed to happen yet for her. But I think she is obviously deserving, and I think she will get her due.
Have you appreciated, Jimmy, the Induct Janet movement that's sort of spearheaded by Mike Litherland? Like, do you and Janet sort of know about that and how hard they've been working? Because, you know, they put in so much effort and it just seems like they're so committed to trying to make sure everyone understands Janet needs to be in there.
Yeah, no, we definitely follow it. I think it's wonderful. And, you know, it's great because it's got the attention of the mainstream press. I mean, it's something that kind of started on Twitter a while back. And now I've noticed that the mainstream press has picked it up, and it's very much appreciated. I definitely keep up with it. I follow the Twitter site, and I think it's wonderful. I appreciate it. She appreciates it. And I know when she does get in, they will be the first person or among the first people that she thanks. Because it is truly a movement. It really is. You can see it. You can see the numbers grow and the followers, and it's a great thing. I mean, it's wonderful. And listen, you're nowhere without your fans anyway. So it's her getting into the Hall of Fame is great, But really, it's great for her fans because they're the ones that really motivate her and make it all possible for her to put in the work and do what it is she does. So I can't wait for that day to happen. And like I say, it'll happen when it's supposed to happen. And when it does, you know, we'll all be celebrating for sure.
Well, on behalf of all the fans, Jimmy, I know they've been asking me for years to get you on my show. So first of all, it's a huge honor to have had you on the show. I cannot tell you what this means to me. I kind of mentioned to you off air that I've interviewed people like Lady Gaga and Coldplay and other amazing artists like Ed Sheeran, and they all meant, you know, a lot to me to be able to do those interviews. But speaking to you has meant so much, especially because just the amount of work that you and Terry have put into her career and everyone else that I've listened to, that you seem to be the soundtrack of my life. And I know a lot of the Janet fans feel the same way. So on behalf of all of them, if I can, you know, carry them on my back for just a second, thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for everything that you've done for her.
Well, that's Kelly, that's very nice. And I will turn that around and say thank you for everything that you've done to support her and myself and Terry and all of the fans, because you've been a voice, a championing voice for her and for what we do creatively. And we appreciate that so much, what you do. So it's a pleasure to speak to you finally. I do listen to all your interviews and stuff that you put up, and I really enjoy it. It's a pleasure to be interviewed by someone who is so knowledgeable, but in their own right, but also certainly is asking the questions I think that the fans would like to know, and I hope I was able to shed some light on some things as we celebrate a year of Unbreakable. And it's only 1 year. We're gonna keep it going.
That's for sure. And of course, you're welcome back on the show anytime. So thank you so much for this, Jimmy. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That's Grammy Award-winning producer Jimmy Jam. Make sure to follow him on his social media at Flight Time Jam.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
As always, thank you so much for joining us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to our guest, the phenomenal Grammy Award-winning Jimmy Jam. It was an honor to have him on the show. We can't wait for him to come back. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from rapper and actor LL Cool J. When adversity strikes, that's when you have to be the most calm. Take a step back, stay strong, stay grounded, and press on. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can do that on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, check out our interviews on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have an awesome week. You and I will chat soon.